Hey, everyone. Saltgrass Steakhouse is now open in Mishawaka. Wrangle up the crew and head down to Saltgrass Mishawaka for an unforgettable experience. Sink your teeth into mouth-watering, char-grilled, certified Angus beef steaks. Sip on ice-cold craft cocktails. And don't forget to try the famous Spicy Range Rattlers, all made daily in the Scratch Kitchen. Start making delicious memories at Saltgrass Mishawaka, 5126 North Main Street, across from Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries. Dine with us today.
Live from our WSBT radio studios in downtown South Bend.
Let's go! Come on!
Welcome to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Wow, don't blink. A lot of major intestinal fortitude going on here.
On your home for Notre Dame football.
Knocked down by Wooden. The game is over. The Irish is upset. Florida State. Notre Dame is number one.
And Notre Dame basketball.
Number one ranked UCLA Bruins have been upset by the Irish of Notre Dame.
Good! Arike Ogunbowale wins the national championship for Notre Dame.
Plus, Fighting Irish hockey.
They score! Jake Evans scores! Notre Dame 3.7 seconds away from a spot in the national championship game.
The NFL and Major League Baseball.
Oh my gracious, yep. How about that?
Sports Radio 960 WSBT, WSBTRadio.com, the free WSBT radio app.
Big time audience.
Now, here's your host, seven-time Associated Press Broadcasting Award winner, Darren Pritchett.
And I'm joined by Eric Hansen, the publisher and editor at InsideIndySports.com. Hall of Fame writer, all those things. And he is here to talk Notre Dame football and more on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat as we broadcast live on 960 AM WSBT. We are streaming live at WSBTRadio.com, our free WSBT radio app. I'm trying to get myself in the shot on the Twitch app, which has a perfect shot of Eric, and I'm trying to get myself into the picture. 8 minutes after 5 o'clock, we are here until 6:45. That's when those South Bend Cubs take on those Fort Wayne Tin Caps over at beautiful Parkview Field in downtown Fort Wayne, Indiana, a former hotbed of NBA basketball back in the day. And go Pacers tonight. I'm trying to get into the NBA playoffs, Eric. I haven't been an NBA fan since the 80s. Larry Bird, Kevin McHale, Robert Parrish, Danny Ainge, and Dennis Johnson, those Celtics. So I'm trying to get into the Pacers. I won't watch them tonight because I have other activities to go to, but we'll say go Pacers. Why not? Okay. We'll show our Hoosier pride tonight. All right, have you seen the trailer that is out for the new college football video game? Have you been following the progress? Because a lot of people are excited.
I am not as excited about the game itself. I never played it before, and I'm not sure that I'll play it now because I'm just not a video game guy. But
no, actually, when you play online, folks, he'll be Hall of Fame writer indeed. That'll be his secret account playing the game. So,
you know, the last time I really played video games was when my kids were littler, and I played the Tony Hawk skateboard game.
That it's changed a lot. It's incredible. But the new trailer is out, and you see a couple of Notre Dame images.
Yeah, I did see that.
And if the images are accurate, which they're supposed to be, it looked like, Eric, on one of the sleeves of the Notre Dame players. Did you notice that?
I didn't, but other people did.
Yeah, the interlocking ND was in gold. It looked like, right? So that might be something new.
Well, there was all kinds of comments about how the Under Armour thing got moved.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, I didn't notice any of that. I mean, if you had showed me two uniforms and said, which one is the current one, I wouldn't be able to name it.
Well, I think I saw one thing very realistic in the trailer, one thing that was very unrealistic. The unrealistic was a full L.A. Coliseum for a USC game.
Oh,
that's very unrealistic, as we all know. And the most realistic, it's on the screen for a half a second, but I paused it and you can see it. But at the end of the trailer, Eric, is the Illinois players holding up the Illibut Trophy after beating Ohio State 52-42. What is more realistic than Illinois beating Ohio State in college football this year?
Well, in a video game, I suppose it could happen.
Oh, come on now. It's as real as can be. Now, actually, there was a time they kind of owned Ohio State, but that was a long time ago. Things have changed, to say the least. Well, thanks to social media, stories take on so many different lives now. And what we woke up to this morning was one of the more bizarre storylines we have seen in some time. And if you're on social media, you've seen all of the gifs that have been going on today. The world's number one golfer and like the nicest, most boring guy in the world, Scottie Scheffler, was arrested. There was a fatal accident outside or near the gates of Valhalla Country Club where the PGA Championship is taking place. There was a major traffic jam, and apparently before you get to the gates, he went into the median trying to get in. Reportedly, an officer told him to stop. Scottie did not. The officer latched on to his car with his hand and got drug, reportedly 10 yards before Scottie stopped. He stopped. He got arrested. He got booked. There's a mugshot. He's got a number. And while in the jail cell, Eric, he saw on ESPN on a TV monitor that the first round was being delayed. He was supposed to tee off in the 8 o'clock hour. He got arrested at 6:01, and he realized that the delay is actually going to work in his favor because he thought there's a chance that he might be able to play today. So, Eric, this is bizarre. Scottie Scheffler gets arrested. He's confused why he's arrested, and he goes out and shoots a 5-under par, 66 today. And last time I looked, he's 2 shots out of the lead, and after the round, this is what he had to say to the golf media.
I did spend some time stretching in a jail cell. That was a first for me. You know, that was part of my warm-up. I was just sitting there waiting, and, you know, I started going through my warm-up. I felt like there was a chance I may be able to still come out here and play, and so I started going through my routine. I tried to get my heart rate down as much as I could today, but like I said, you know, I still feel like my head's spinning a little bit, but yeah, I was fortunate to be able to make it back out and play some golf today. I was pretty rattled, to say the least. You know, the officer that took me to the jail was very kind. He was great. You know, we had a nice chat in the car that kind of helped calm me down. And I was sitting there waiting to kind of go in. I asked him. I was like, "Hey, excuse me, can you just come hang out with me for a few minutes so I can calm down?" And you know, I was never, you know, angry. I was just in shock, and I think my body was just, I was shaking the whole time. I was shaking for like an hour. It was definitely a new feeling for me, and he came out, and we had a nice chat, and then the officers inside the jail were tremendous. A couple of them made some jokes, I think, when they figured out, you know, who I was and what happened and, you know, how I ended up there. You know, they, this one older officer looked at me as I was doing, like, my fingerprints or whatever, and he looks at me, he goes, "So, do you want the full experience today?" And I kind of looked at him, I was like, I don't know how to answer that. And he's like, "Come on, man, you want a sandwich?" And I was like, "Sure, I'll take a sandwich. I hadn't eaten breakfast yet." And so, I mean, they were really kind. I'm grateful that we have, you know, such strong police, and, you know, there are protectors out there. And, you know, like I said, we just got into a chaotic situation this morning. That's really all it was.
All right, there you go. That was Scottie's account of going to jail, getting out of jail, and then playing in a major championship and birdied the first hole en route to a 5-under par 66. My son texted me. He was on his way to school and said, "You got to check out Twitter." He didn't say why, and it was shocking to see Scottie Scheffler being arrested. So there's a felony count. There's some misdemeanor accounts. Apparently, the officer was drug on the ground and suffered an injury. And at the end of the report, he said his police pants were unfixable. So $80 pants that were ruined by this particular incident. I don't know protocol. I'm not sure why you latch onto a car like that, but we'll see how this all plays out. I have a feeling it's going to be a lot about nothing, a lot of confusion. So we'll see how it plays out. And I'm just curious, Jim Nance, who always has a creative way of announcing who wins a major after the final putt, I would say it's unlimited what he could possibly go to with that call if Scheffler wins the PGA Championship this weekend. Locally, we found out thanks to John Rothstein of CBS Sports. He has tweeted that Notre Dame guard Marcus Burton has told him he's taken his name out of the NBA draft. The former Penn star had until May 29th to take his name out of the draft so he could return to the University of Notre Dame. So we are on May 17th, done in plenty of time. Hopefully he got the information he was looking for to improve his game, but he'll be back for his sophomore campaign after averaging 17 points and 4 assists. Sometimes declaring for the NBA draft, Eric, is a tad bit deceiving. Many players know they're not going to get drafted, but they get their game analyzed. It gets broken down by NBA executives, and they are told this is what you need to work on to be able to be an NBA player, or maybe in Marcus's case, an opportunity to improve his game at the collegiate level. So this isn't a shock, but at the same time, it's now official, and the Irish have a chance to have one of the best backcourts in the ACC next year. I'm assuming the ACC will be intact yet at that particular time, which we'll talk about in a couple of moments. All right, so that's kind of some news. Other than the Cubs getting no hit for 6 2/3 innings today, Paul Skenes, the fabulous rookie from LSU, 6 hitless innings, 11 strikeouts today. He was fabulous, and that game, it is, let's see, 9-3, Pirates in the bottom of the ninth inning. All right, Eric, let's get to it. Let's get to now some football conversation here on WSBT Radio. I want to talk about the four Notre Dame quarterbacks from a different perspective. Let's just play the game and assume Riley Leonard is your starting quarterback this fall. The odds say that would be the case. Steve Angeli, likely the number two. And then 3 and 4, I'm going to assume Minshew, then Carr, but we'll see how it plays out. I bring this up because we know Riley Leonard, his college eligibility is up after this year. Everybody else on the depth chart, Eric, has eligibility remaining. So as you go into this season, and I bring this up because after you play Texas A&M on the road, the games between A&M and Florida State, on paper, Notre Dame is going to have a chance to win a lot of games and maybe outside of Louisville, win games by double digits, which means in games you're blowing out the competition, reserves get opportunities to play. But Eric, what about the quarterback position? Because Leonard is out of eligibility. Do you feel like the two guys at the bottom of the depth chart, Minshew and Carr, will they get snaps this fall? And in your opinion, is that important?
Game snaps, I don't. If everybody stays healthy above them, meaning Angeli and Leonard, I don't think they will get meaningful game snaps.
Right.
Yeah. That
I'm talking about blowout end of game. Yeah,
but even then, I mean, Kenny Minchie, how many passes did he throw? And, you know, four,
I think. Ish,
and handed off a little bit. I mean, at least you get your feet wet. So could they get in a game like that? Yes. Could they see meaningful action? Something would really have to change either in someone's performance or someone's health for that to happen, I think. It just doesn't – I mean, you just go back over. Now, again, at Duke last year, where Riley Leonard got injured, their third-string quarterback was their starter at the end of the season because number two also got injured. So situations can change. There are – times where Drew Pine was playing at Arizona State, I think 3 or 4 guys made starts out there. But in general, that doesn't happen to teams, so I'm not anticipating that. And the problem is, you know, Riley Leonard needs the game reps with his teammates too. You know, he's still forming chemistry. Let's say you get through the Texas A&M opener with a win, mm-hmm. and then you start getting into the Northern Illinois, Purdue, Miami of Ohio stretch. You know, Riley Leonard can use those games to get better for when the defenses get tougher. They have Louisville kind of in the middle of the schedule, and they have Florida State and USC in November. And so you don't want to just say, ah, well, you know what, he's got all these reps. Because, again, he didn't get a lot of reps last year. He didn't get any after the middle of October. And so he is in need of those reps and getting more sound in the offense and possibly winning a playoff game. So I think prioritizing 2025 would be a mistake, because you have a potential playoff roster in 2024. You may have it in 2025 as well, but you have it this year.
Let me take it a step further, and I'm going to focus on Minshew and Carr once again exclusively. If you are Marcus Freeman, or if you just want to be Eric Hansen analyzing the situation, however you want to handle that,
if I were Marcus Freeman, I wouldn't have this purple shirt on.
I was going to say, the pay stubs are a little different.
I would have a better drip.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you both have beards.
Okay.
Okay.
And Ohio State degrees.
Wow, you guys have a ton in common. Look at that. Beards, Ohio State degrees. Follow Notre Dame football closely. It's amazing. It's amazing. But seriously, Minshew and Carr, do you worry at all about using eligibility, in particular Carr? He's a freshman.
Yeah.
Do you care at all if he gets into five games burning a year of eligibility, knowing that if he is as good, and I don't mean to put words in people's mouths, but I get the sense from the Notre Dame coaching staff, they really love C.J. Carr and what he's capable of. Do you worry about, quote unquote, and I don't like using this phrase, but burning a year in his freshman campaign, knowing there's a good chance he might be the start of the next 2 years, and if things go well for him, he's off to bigger and better things?
Yeah, I don't think you worry about burning a year of eligibility with C.J. Carr, because I don't see him as a five-year college player. If they get 4 years out of him, I think that might be it, if he's as good as he's supposed to be. And also, when you consider who's going to be behind him, you know,
yeah, true.
Deuce Knight is coming up behind him, and then, you know, Notre Dame is zeroing in on its 2026 quarterback, and Tyler James just put in a future cast for Noah Grubbs,
okay,
who is right now the number 44 player in the country, a high four-star pro style 6'4" quarterback from Lake Mary, Florida.
Florida, okay. This is a lot more fun than quarterback recruiting 5-6 years ago.
Yeah. So I mean, you're starting to stack these top 50 guys after top 50 guys and class after class. And again, when you look at today's NFL, in general, unless there's an injury or there's a development hiccup, nobody that's a high draft choice in general is staying for 5 years, and a lot of them are not staying for four.
It's a nice problem to have.
Yeah.
So if C.J. Carr plays in five games, just hypothetically five games, which is one over the max.
Five regular season.
Regular season. Thank you, because bowl game is different. No Irish fan should be worried about using a year of eligibility.
No.
Okay, I agree with you. Okay,
are some, like an offensive lineman.
Sure,
I could see saying, "Yeah, you don't want to burn a year of eligibility." Like Garby Lambert, if Garby isn't going to be a starter, I would go ahead and redshirt him. Even though if he's as good as we think he's going to be, he's probably going to be 4 and out. I mean, Notre Dame just had its first 2 3-and-out offensive linemen in the school history, and Alt and Blake Fisher. But I mean, you look at Quentin Nelson and stuff. I mean, those guys, and McGlinchey stayed around for 5 years. So, yeah, I think different positions require different thoughts about those kind of things.
He's Eric Hansen from InsideIndySports.com. I'm Darren Pritchett. Sports Beat continues at 525. ACC commissioner and former member of the Irish Athletic Department, Jim Phillips, said in an interview on the ACC Network, he doesn't know why the ACC football conference has a perception problem. And he wants to spend money with a consultation firm to figure out why. so many things come to the forefront here as I think about this, but let me just begin with this question. Do you think there truly is an ACC football perception problem, or is this an overreaction to Florida State not making the Final Four last year?
I don't think it's an overreaction to Florida State. I do think there's a perception problem, and I think there's a reality problem. I think there's both, and it's not just Florida State not making the playoff field as an undefeated champion last year. It's bringing in Stanford, Cal, and SMU, and half the conference throwing a fit about it. It's kind of like your wife throwing your clothes out onto the lawn and saying, "Ah, oh, we've got a great marriage." and then you have two schools involved in active lawsuits with the conference right now. You have North Carolina being very open about saying, we might have outgrown this league. Maybe there's something better for us. And they're probably right. I don't know that Florida State and Clemson are as attractive overall as North Carolina is to, let's say, the Big Ten. And so all this kind of airs itself out publicly. And then the reality part of it, Darren, is, you know, the ACC at a time where they kind of had to do it, locked into a TV contract that took them through 2036. They also got into this grant of rights deal, which locks the teams into ACC membership into 2036, essentially, unless they can find a legal loophole. And that's what Florida State and Clemson have started to do. So, but the other part of this, though, is it doesn't mean this is terminal. The Big 12, if you can remember, was on beyond life support at one point. They were
going to be the Pac-12.
Yeah, they were going to be the Pac-12. People were going to pick that carcass off, and, you know, what was going to happen to these great basketball schools like Kansas and Kansas State? Nobody'd want their football at that time. And so this could turn itself around. I think that Jim Phillips getting a consulting firm, if he thinks that can help, but he needs to help change reality. That's what's going to drive the perception more than anything else.
Eric, we see ACC football semi up close with the 4 or 5 games that Notre Dame plays against the league every year. And right now, it's not quality football throughout the conference. And Eric, can't you make an argument? Teams truly all in football, trying to make the playoff, win championships realistically. Florida State and Clemson are all in. Miami's trying, but they seem to get in their own way every single year. But outside of those three, and I know North Carolina has been solid under Mack Brown, but they seem to always lose a game that they're not supposed to lose. It's just not great football from top to bottom. And I just don't see enough schools truly capable of being a playoff contender. And I'm not talking about a 4-team playoff. Eric, we're talking about 12-team and eventually probably a 14-team playoff. Outside of Florida State, Clemson, Miami, North Carolina, maybe Florida or NC State or Louisville once in a while, it's just not a conference full of heavy hitters. But when you look at the SEC and the Big Ten, you could go 6-7 deep. Teams that you could figure each year at least have a fighter's chance to be in contention for the college football playoff.
True. And again, the money gap between the SEC, Big Ten, and you can throw Notre Dame in there. Notre Dame is in that upper tier.
It's like Marcus Freeman and you again.
Right. And then the next tier down is ACC and the Big 12. And you see it even in these proposals for the 14-team playoff, where the Big Ten and the SEC are demanding 3 qualifiers each in that format and subjecting those others to maybe 1 automatic qualifier. And so that's one front. And then when you go to hire coaches, assistant coaches and head coaches, those 2 conferences have more buying power. They can hire away your assistants, your good assistants, because they can pay them more. They can pay head coaches more. they'll have better recruiting pitches and facilities and so forth just because the money's better. Now, right now, Clemson and Florida State are in a pretty good position, but there's going to start to be a gap there, especially if Dabo doesn't have a renaissance, and certainly he's trying to do it a different way. Yeah. I mean, there were four schools that didn't take any transfers. Army, Navy, Air Force, and Clemson.
Mm. We'll talk about that in a second.
Okay.
We'll get to that. Do you believe the ACC in the coming years will start to go down the road more of the Pac-12 than the Big 12? Because if this loophole is found, Eric, it just feels like the ACC is going to lose its grip on having the power in this particular situation, and then some college football looting is going to begin in the ACC like we saw in the Pac-12.
I'm not sure. I'm torn a little bit. I think those schools want to explore it, and it's kind of like the hole in the fence where, you know, your puppies get out and stuff. But I should have had Bill Rafter. He's the puppies.
Get the puppies organized.
Yeah, the puppies are organizing themselves out of the fence. The question, though, is are there that many schools in the ACC, the Big Ten and the SEC want? Do they want to divide up that pie more? And I'm not sure. Let's say Virginia Tech. What does Virginia Tech do for either of those conferences if Virginia Tech wanted out?
No, thank you.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know if I really want Clemson if I'm the Big Ten.
Right.
You think about academic like schools. Clemson does not come to mind for me. To me, it's North Carolina and Virginia.
Right. They have the broad-based programs. They have the demographics. They have a lot of things that are attractive to those top-tier conferences. Whereas Florida State, maybe not. And you know, Miami, really not. You know,
yeah.
There's not...
It's not an attractive conference.
Right. And so I think the ACC's best way to improve the situation, including the people that want out, is getting more revenue streams. I don't know how much they can renegotiate that 2036 contract, and I don't think that they can wait till 2036. They're going to have be really creative in what else they can bring. From a Notre Dame standpoint, this is still a very good home for them. They're happy
right now
with
until the looting begins.
Well, with their basketball teams there, and you look at lacrosse, the ACC lacrosse for men's and women's is the best conference. You know, Notre Dame somehow made the NCAA finals for the first time since 1966 in men's golf. So
how about that?
Those ACC schools are rubbing off on them.
They have a really good coach. Really, really good coach.
So there are things to like about the ACC arrangement.
Clemson head coach Dabo Swinney, quote, "I mean, it's pretty simple. Most of the guys in the portal aren't good enough to play for us," end quote. You just laid out the four teams that did not add from the portal, and this is not going to make Clemson fans happy. They're frustrated, but Dabo is not using the transfer portal. This is a dangerous move. I give him credit. Trying to do it the old-fashioned way, recruit, develop, get your stars on the field, and win games. But, Eric, you can fill significant holes using the transfer portal. Is he crazy for doing this?
He is crazy for doing it because he's not even doing his homework. And let me give you a contrast. Let me tell you what Notre Dame's doing. I've got a two-part series. One part ran this morning and one part runs tomorrow about how Notre Dame is approaching roster building. And the central figure, and this is Matt Jansen, who's been the director of scouting at Notre Dame since last July. I think he was doing some work last June. But Here's let me boil down the methodology just for the portal part of this. He starts in the summer by talking to coaches, assistant coaches, and Marcus Freeman and Chad Bowden, who's the assistant athletic director in charge of personnel. What are the traits you guys are looking for? And then he builds a database of 30 to 50 players that are potential transfers, potential that can get into Notre Dame.
That's going to be my next question.
Yeah, not just transfers, period, that can, you know, thread the – it's not threading the needle, but there is constricted the guardrails of what Notre Dame will accept as a transfer. 30 to 50 per position group. So you're talking hundreds of guys he starts with. He builds that database up, and he starts with the teams that Notre Dame's going to play this year because he scouts them for personnel nuances to help the coaches. He doesn't give them X's and O's. He's just like, here's who they use, here's who we got to be aware of, and that kind of thing. And you look at the incoming transfer class this year, there were 8 scholarship guys. 4 of them Notre Dame played, 3 in 2023 and 1 at the tail end of 2022. So they were familiar with those guys. Then they build out from that, and then you follow those guys throughout the fall. As you get closer to the portal opening, then you winnow that down. You look back and you say, okay, who really, out of those 30 to 50 in that position group, really could play for Notre Dame? So you get down to maybe 10. And then let's say on the first day the portal opens, 6 of them go in the portal. So Matt Jansen will go to Marcus Freeman and Chad Bowden and say, these are the 6. And the assistant coaches will look at them and they'll maybe get it down to 3.
Hmm.
So there's a huge science here in how Notre Dame goes about this. And there's a science in looking at players at lower divisions, group of 5, SCS, and so forth. There is so much invested in this to get the right fits, to get the right guys, to get guys that turn into Javonte Jean-Baptiste, yeah, who was kind of an afterthought at Ohio State, but an interesting player, and turns into one of Notre Dame's best 5 players last season.
Folks can check out your series at InsideNDSports.com. And the first part of the series available today.
And the next part will be online at 9 a.m. tomorrow.
Oh, so that quick turnaround. Yeah. All right, yep. Very good. Interesting read. Can't wait to check it out. He's Eric Hansen, the Hall of Fame writer, publisher, and editor at InsideNDSports.com. My name is Darren Pritchett. We'll take a timeout. We'll take a look at the Notre Dame defensive depth chart at the back end. The corners, the safeties, we'll throw in the nickel. We'll have a conversation of what the summertime depth chart might look like if we snuck into Marcus Freeman's office. We'll do that next on WSBT. We are back on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on this Friday evening. My name is Darren Pritchett. My partner is Eric Hansen, the Hall of Fame writer, publisher, and editor at InsideNDSports.com. And we are here talking Notre Dame football on this Friday evening. We've been going through the depth chart for Notre Dame football that Eric, Tyler, and the crew have put together at InsideNDSports.com. If you want to see what their opinions are on the summer depth chart for the Irish, go to InsideNDSports.com. At the top of the page, you'll see football. Click on it. A bunch of options will come up. All you have to do is click on depth chart, and you will see their opinion on what Marcus Freeman's dry erase board might look like in his office. So we've talked about the front 4 on defense, the linebacking core, which has a lot of interesting combinations. Now let's go to the back end of the defense. As we talk about the corners, the safeties, and the nickel, not a lot of drama, Eric, about the cornerback position. So let's just begin there. Benjamin Morrison has a chance to be an All-American once again this year, a possible top 10 pick in the 2025 National Football League draft. And it sure looked like, before he got hurt during the spring, he was trying to take his game to an elite level. As there were some videos coming out of practice, Eric, where Benjamin was making some spectacular plays on the football, including, if I remember right, an Odell Beckham type one-handed catch in the spring. So even though he's outstanding and probably not many teams are going to pick on him, there's another level that he's trying to attain.
Yeah, and you look at the mock drafts, and I think the NFL people are pretty confident that he's going to attain that level. He's in every mock draft I've seen and in the top 10 of most of them. So that's the level I think that's out there for him. And, you know, in the brief time he was in spring practice, he looked like the best player on the team. And this is one with a unanimous All-American coming back at safety. Yeah. And a guy that made every major All-American team, second teamer, Howard Cross, and some other really interesting players. And he is, I think, the best player on the team.
Boundary corner for Benjamin?
I think so. I think you could flip-flop
yep.
those, but I think he definitely, that seems like the best place for him, because then you can just kind of not worry about it.
Let's build around that thought. Benjamin Morrison at the boundary corner, the field corner. Would you say there is still a competition right now going into the fall between Christian Gray and Jaden Mickey? Or should I ask, does either of the two have a slight advantage?
Well, I mean, Jaden Mickey plays that position. That's where he takes all his reps. Christian Gray will train on both sides. I think Christian Gray is the better of those two players, and I hate to say that. Everything that Jaden Mickey's been through, I think he'll play a lot, mm-hmm. and he's earned it. This isn't out of sympathy. He's earned that, and they'll play three cornerbacks a lot. The fact they don't play four a lot is one of the reasons Micah Bell maybe hit the portal. The other is Micah Bell wants to be a wide receiver. He's going to be that at Vanderbilt. So you've lost three players to the portal in the offseason from that cornerback room. And clearly, Christian Gray, Mickey, and Morrison are maybe as good a trio as there is in the country. It's certainly they'd be in the conversation for that when you say, who's your best three corners?
Worst case, this is not a situation we hope we have to talk about, but just hypothetically speaking, two of those three go down with an injury at the same time. Are you okay with the depth right now on this roster at the corner spots?
No, but and that's why Notre Dame looked at Trayshon Devons from Rice. And then when the portal opened up in the spring, there were fewer outgoing transfers than maybe Notre Dame calculated. And I think one of them that's safe to say without, I mean, because it was so out in the open, was Ford, the defensive tackle. He missed the Blue Gold game. He missed the scrimmage the week before. He was contemplating leaving and then ends up not leaving. And so Notre Dame is trying to recruit someone who plays corner who's willing to come in as a walk-on, a transfer. I don't think there are many out there that are better than, let's say, who the number four cornerback is right now, Chance Tucker. That means freshman Leonard Moore and Carson Hobbs need to be maybe more whistle-ready than we thought. Tyler James, who looks at film more than I do by far, thinks Leonard Moore probably is the more advanced of those two. They okay. both have good length. The one little safety valve you have is, this is kind of an indirect way, is how good the safeties were, the young safeties this spring. So you might be able to move them up the depth chart and maybe slide Rod Hurd away from safety into maybe the nickel spot, maybe have him play just a corner spot if you need a depth. He did that at Northwestern. That's what he was at Northwestern. He wasn't a safety there. So it wouldn't be a stretch for him to play corner if they got into a bind.
But at safety, we don't have to talk about Xavier Watts. I mean, Nagurski Award winner.
Right.
We can.
You have Xavier Watts, but then you had Adon Schuler and Luke Talich, who were expected to make a step forward and made a vault forward. They just both were really good this spring.
So let's just go to the nickel. They brought in Jordan Clark from Arizona State, his dad, well-known NFL player, ESPN analyst Ryan Clark. Coming out of the spring, is Jordan Clark your nickel? And is there still a competition to be the number two guy? I have a feeling maybe a linebacker could come into this conversation.
You mean default?
Well, we saw a pretty good linebacker covering a slot guy and Jaden Osbury in the blue goal game.
Right. And I think that's the hope with the Rover position, the way Notre Dame is recruiting it again now when they're looking at players like Nathaniel Owusu-Boateng, is they're looking to get somebody that can play the nickel, basically, or play in nickel situations as a linebacker. And Jaden Osbury is the guy that most closely resembles that. And he got reps at nickel. He got reps at safety. He got reps at the Aztec, which is a sixth defensive back in one of their packages. He got reps inside. He got reps outside. And you know what? He did so well at all of it. They're like, we're going to use him. We're not sure where, but he's going to show up. The problem is, I think you want a little bit more there and not to have to lean into Jaden Osbury as much. So what do you do there? Clarence Lewis was kind of the great insurance policy, and he decided, you know what, I want to start for somebody and be their number one guy. So he went to Syracuse. So really, I would say, you know, you can look at the two freshmen, Hobbs and Leonard Moore, and I think Chance Tucker at different times has profiled as a guy that they looked at nickel. Micah Bell was a guy that was training there, so him leaving wasn't ideal. And again, there's enough with Rod Hurd II that you could move him over there if you had to, and he would do very well there. So the position flexibility is helping Notre Dame in this situation.
All right. Again, check out Eric's opinion on the depth chart at InsideIndySports.com. Go to football and depth chart, and you can take a look. We'll start looking at the offense next week. 552 at WSBT. 554 WSBT. He's Eric. I'm Darren. SportsBeat, InsideIndySports.com. Twitter question of the day from Wednesday. Which of these former Notre Dame running back rookie seasons will be the closest to what Audric Estime will do for the Denver Broncos in 2024? The results, fourth place, 10%, Reggie Brooks, who had 1,063 rushing yards and three touchdowns for the Redskins. Third place, 21%, Paul Hornung, with Green Bay in the 60s, 319 yards and three touchdowns. Second place, 27%, Vegas Ferguson had 818 rushing yards and two touchdowns. Winning the vote, Ryan Grant. With the Packers, 42% say Estime will have something close to Grant's 956 rushing yards and eight touchdowns. We thank you for voting. And now, on my Twitter X account at 960SportsBeat, you can answer today's question, which is, former Notre Dame quarterback Sam Hartman was signed by the Washington Commanders as an undrafted free agent. How long will his NFL career last? Less than 2 years or more than 2 years? You can vote at Twitter X on my account at 960SportsBeat. All right, quickly we have to go to Eric Hansen. He's going to tell you what's coming up at InsideIndySports.com.
Check out my series on Notre Dame, how they're doing their roster building, scouting and everything, transfer portal. Part one was today. Part two is tomorrow. We've got scads of recruiting information, including Jameer Joseph stating his top five, which Notre Dame is in, and his visits, and much, much more.
Have a great weekend.
You too.
We'll see you next week. It is 5:55 at Sports Radio 960 WSBT, the voice of the Fort Wayne Tin Caps, John Nolan. We'll talk some baseball next on WSBT. And we're back on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on your home of the Fighting Irish, Sports Radio 960 WSBT. It would be a beautiful night for a South Bend Cubs game at Four Winds Field, but the Cubbies are on the road in Fort Wayne, where they get to play in another outstanding ballpark, Parkview Field, home of the Fort Wayne Tin Caps, and you can hear the Tin Caps and the Cubs coming up in about 40 minutes here on WSBT Radio. And right now I'm joined by the voice of the Fort Wayne Tin Caps, and he calls in from Parkview Field where the game will take place tonight. He is John Nolan. John, always good to catch up with you. How are you this evening?
Hey, Darren. Yeah, thanks so much for the chance to join here. I'm doing well. Like you said, we're lucky that we do get to have the Tin Caps and the Cubs here at Parkview Field tonight. Weather warming up, school letting out, so the crowds are starting to get bigger, and plenty of exciting prospects to watch as well.
Parkview Field, Four Winds Field, and Victory Field down in Indianapolis. I would imagine there aren't too many states that can match the quality of those three ballparks.
Yeah, and we've probably talked about this before. It's a little bit ironic because obviously our state is known and really synonymous with basketball, and you got Notre Dame football and the Colts, you know, everyone thinks about. But I would agree with you. I think from top to bottom, you're not going to find a state with three better ballparks in minor league baseball than Indiana.
I'm curious. I don't think I've ever asked you this, but how big is Notre Dame football over in Fort Wayne?
Well, I don't know how you feel in the Michiana area, but here I've run into a lot of people who are Notre Dame football fans and then IU basketball fans.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So I think, yeah, there's definitely, you know, a strong strong presence of proud Catholics here in Fort Wayne who are definitely Fighting Irish fans. You know, I actually had the chance to catch head coach Marcus Freeman speaking at an event here in Fort Wayne a couple weeks ago with one of the players on the team as well. I know they spoke to an alumni support group here too. So definitely, you know, a strong contingent of Irish fans here, no question.
Yeah, I think Mike Bray years ago decided not to play Indiana because we discovered that some of the Irish season ticket holders were actually Indiana fans, and they would wear their crimson and cream when Indiana came to town, and there went the home court advantage. So it seems like, John, through the years when I was calling South Bend games and even since, for whatever reason, Fort Wayne always seems to be one of the youngest teams in the Midwest League. Is that the case again this year?
Yeah, and that's definitely been the approach of the Padres general manager, A.J. Preller, not shy about being aggressive. And so last year that included assigning 17-year-old catcher Ethan Salas to the Tin Caps, which was almost unprecedented for a 17-year-old to be, and again, remember at this point, the high A level, not just the single A level or low A. And, you know, Salas is actually back here with the Tin Caps again this year. So overall, it is a different type of roster. We're not necessarily the youngest team overall, like by average age, but we do have the youngest player. And then waiting in the wings right now at the Padres single A affiliate out in California, they've got a 17-year-old shortstop. Wouldn't be surprised if he performs, if he makes it up here too. So maybe not as many of those teenage prospects, but they've got some good ones still in the system that they are still not shy about progressing pretty quickly.
You know, I'm curious, since you brought up Salas, I was going to ask you about him. I know right now at the plate he's struggling, but what is in the toolkit that makes him so special to be 17 years old at this level? And I think it's fair to say, John, within the Padres organization, expectations are through the roof for this guy.
Yeah, he is expected to be their catcher of the future. And so at this point, and again, as a catcher, they definitely think that the hit tool is part of the package for him. And you're right, it hasn't shown up yet, at least as far as the batting average goes. Though I will say he leads the team in walks, but I think tells you a couple of things. One, it's that he does have an advanced approach and that he's not someone who's really, you know, chasing wildly. And secondly, I think in this day and age of social media, I mean, Salas is a guy who's kind of got a target on his back. MLB.com has ranked him as the top catching prospect in all of baseball. So I think everyone who's facing him is, you know, they're bringing their best because, and for one, also they're like 6 years older than him on average. So they're more experienced. But I think, you know, guys are kind of, you know, up for the challenge when they're facing him, when they're on the mound. And I would expect here after going through a lot of, you know, chilly nights and wet nights that he had a double in our game here last night to the gap in right center. I think we're going to start to see more of that. But you know, as a catcher, most importantly, you just hear the pitchers and coaches rave about the job that he's doing, you know, managing the pitching staff, and a great teammate, because actually, as we talk about how he struggled batting average-wise, been hovering around just 200, and again, at 17, he really should be probably playing at Four Winds Field tonight as a high school senior, having a senior night. But instead, he's playing professional baseball since he had signed out of Venezuela as an international free agent. But I've been probably at this point most impressed with just the caliber of teammate he is, because he's not and I've been, you know, you've experienced this too, Darren. Sometimes you're around a minor league baseball prospect, they're struggling, and all of a sudden you can kind of just feel the tension on them, and
yeah,
you don't even really want to walk by them in the hallway because it's hard, and they can't even crack a smile and, you know, manage to really be all that friendly. Ethan's, you know, you wouldn't know that he's necessarily struggling to find some hits early on this season by the way that he's carrying himself. Teammates rave about him, just the way that he fits into the clubhouse. So I think actually that's probably the biggest takeaway, is that here's a guy who's already showing at the age of 17 that he can be mature about handling some adversity. And yeah, I think he's going to ultimately be all the better for it. You know, we've seen over the years here at the lower levels of the minors, prospects sometimes, yeah, they don't necessarily have the most impressive stats when they're younger and challenging themselves like this, but you know, pays off down the road.
He is the voice of the Fort Wayne Tin Caps, John Nolan, joining me here on WSBT Radio. Since Fort Wayne is affiliated with San Diego and you do your homework on this Padres organization, I'm curious your perspective. I think San Diego had what I would call a fascinating offseason. They trade one of the best hitters in baseball, Juan Soto, and it looks like, all right, they're going to scale back their payroll, they're going to kind of rebuild, but then all of a sudden, out of the blue, they go and get one of the top so-called available starting pitchers in Dylan Cease. They acquire him from the Chicago White Sox. I'm going to ask it this way. Do the San Diego Padres now have to become very creative in everything they do, because the Los Angeles Dodgers have become the New York Yankees from basically 25 years ago?
Yeah, and it definitely is tough to try to compete with the Dodgers in the NL West with their payroll. And, yeah, I think the Padres sort of have acknowledged that they were, to some level, you would say, overspending the last few years. I think they had the third highest payroll overall, behind only the Dodgers and the Yankees last year. And so, to some degree, they've limited that spending. That's why they traded Juan Soto here in advance of his free agency. But at the same time, you know, that they have been smart, and, you know, credit the scouting department for acquiring so much talent through the draft and through international free agency to have these prospects that other teams have coveted. So, yeah, getting Cease, who, by the way, I don't know about you, I still have memories of us being here in Fort Wayne in April or May and waiting out a long rain delay before we finally got to see Dylan Cease take the mound here and shut down the Tin Caps, which I think had Tatis at the time.
Yeah.
But they got Cease, and then just in the last couple of weeks, making a trade for Luis Arias from the Marlins. But again, they dealt off some top prospects we'd seen here in Fort Wayne. So I think the Padres are definitely trying to contend. I mean, that they're not, this is not a rebuild. They are competing to be in the postseason. And then, yeah, I think to some degree you almost acknowledge you're probably not going to be able to dethrone the Dodgers for the divisional title, but with having three wild cards available in the National League now, and they're kind of like top heavy in the starting rotation, so they're better built for the playoffs, and they've got some guys who, you know, could kind of go off on a tear as far as the star power, with Tatis and Machado, and Xander Bogaerts has underperformed so far this year, but yeah, I think they are kind of built for the postseason if they can get there. Last year they underachieved and then they fell a couple games short. So we'll see how this season goes.
John, you know, as a minor league broadcaster, we're running around the ballpark in and out of the clubhouse. And Dylan Cease was here for April, May, June, and then the trade deadline hit. He got traded. So we saw him for 3.5 months and he got injured. And so he missed several weeks. But to me, he was the most interesting guy on game day. Pitchers do their things. A lot of guys have music, headphones. He would sit and read a book in the training area. And I just thought, that was so different than anything else that I ever witnessed a pitcher do. Do you recall any position player or pitcher doing anything out of the ordinary like that? Because reading a book and a baseball player on the day of a game just doesn't seem logical in the locker room.
Yeah, no, I agree. Sometimes those starting pitchers, they're kind of in their own world on their start day, usually pretty locked in with headphones. And yeah, you're not catching them sounding relaxed like Cease was, I guess, in that case. You know, one thing that's, this is maybe not a direct answer to your question, but it's kind of interesting I've seen here recently with Fort Wayne guys. There's a group of mostly pitchers, because I think pitchers are the ones who tend to have maybe some more time on their hands. But these guys are doing the USA crossword puzzle on a daily basis. now the New York Times app has all these games like Wordle and others like that. Yeah. And so, these guys, you know, kind of, I guess it fits with the competitive nature of pro athletes. You know, they're competing in the morning as far as solving these puzzles and stuff goes. In recent years, there's always been a chessboard in the clubhouse. And so you got kind of like a running chess tournament going. So, and as a, you know, to that point as well, I guess you would know better than me, having a son who's a teenager right now. I don't know in general how many kids these days are still playing cards. Yeah. But while, yes, certainly these young guys are on their phones and playing video games and stuff like that, I guess I do kind of find it refreshing that, you know, having a deck of cards and sitting down, that is not dead. And so we still see that here in 2024.
John Nolan, voice of the Tin Caps, my guest. I'm curious, since you do television and radio for Fort Wayne, we see in Major League Baseball broadcasts where they are getting into a lot of the analytics, the velocity, the ball off the bat. We're getting all these numbers. Does San Diego offer any of that to you? And do you like mixing in those type of things if it's available?
That's a great question. And, yeah, I've noticed it's kind of differed organization, sort of what teams would share with media, for instance. And now it's even different because at AAA in recent years, like, it's publicly out there because they've got that automatic ball strike zone.
Right.
And if you listen to the highlights of like the Iowa Cubs, last night, for instance, I caught a highlight of Brennan Davis hitting a home run, and boom, instantaneously, broadcaster was able to tell you how it went 400 something feet. Finally, the Padres have been able to let us tap into that here in Fort Wayne. So, yeah, I think it is great to know, because sometimes you think the ball was hit hard, but you can't necessarily, you know, back it up with the data. And now it's nice to be able to say, like, all right, he lined out, but that's an encouraging sign because he just hit it 102 miles an hour. And, you know, maybe if a guy's in a slump, that's an indication that he's about to break through. Or even, you know, last night there was a really hard ball, hard hit ball to third baseman. They weren't able to make the play on it. And, you know, maybe as from the outside, you're thinking, oh, third baseman's got to make that play. Well, it was hit 102 miles an hour. So that's not really like a routine thing for him to be able to react to from a right-handed hitter. So I think in situations like that, it's really helpful to have those analytics. And not to mention even, knowing what the actual – Hawkeye system strike zone is. And so this way, you know, kind of reserving judgment of umpires for maybe when it's warranted.
How long do you think before the automated strike zone comes to Major League Baseball?
Yeah, I don't have any insight on this one, but I would think it's coming in, you know, next few years, right? I mean, now that it's been in AAA, so a solid percentage of major leaguers have actually had experience with it. I mean, and beyond AAA, we've seen it in the Arizona Fall League, and I think in some minor league or spring training settings, some of the other minor leagues at the single A level. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm not too much of a better, but I'd probably be comfortable in thinking it happens in the next 3 years.
Okay. All right. Very, very interesting.
What do you think?
I think in the next 3 years it'll be in Major League Baseball. I think with social media, and we're now getting these reports on how many pitches the umpires miss, and they have an extremely difficult job, but I just feel like Major League Baseball doesn't hold umpires, should I say certain umpires, accountable, and we see the social media posts, and it just looks kind of bad. So I'm kind of looking forward to see if an automated strike zone would be good for Major League Baseball. I'm hoping to trying it, but it's still going to be weird. It's going to be Really, really strange. So two quick ones for you, really quick. You asked this on Twitter, so I'm going to turn the tables. Who's the best player you've ever seen in a minor league baseball game?
Yeah, and as the Cubs faced Paul Skenes today, I was thinking about it when he made his debut last week. And unfortunately, actually, a former Fort Wayne player ahead of my time here, Sean Burroughs, passed away.
Yeah.
For me, I would have to say Fernando Tatis Jr. and a 1A would be Trey Turner, both at the time shortstops with the Tin Caps here in Fort Wayne. And I guess Tatis we had for a longer period of time. Plus, he has more power, so you kind of just saw all of his amazing tools on display for a longer stretch, although Turner was incredible when we had him. So, definitely had an appreciation for witnessing those guys on a day-in, day-out basis for a while.
Finally, just seeing South Bend for the first time this year over the last couple of days, any player you find interesting or you found fun to watch so far?
Well, we saw Felix Perez hit a 400, or Felix Stevens, excuse me, hit a 400-plus foot home run last night. I mean, he is a physically imposing guy. I know at 24, not necessarily a top Chicago Cubs prospect, but otherwise we've seen Brett Bateman get on base at a pretty crazy rate and make some nice catches in the outfield. And obviously you got these young guys like Jefferson Rojas and Pedro Ramirez who can really swing it. Fort Wayne's last in the league in batting average right now. So, yeah, we have some extra admiration for seeing these guys. They're just getting knock after knock. We'll get a look tonight at the lefty Drew Gray for the South Bend Cubs here at Parkview Field. And by the way, we'll just a little plug for tomorrow night. It's a 6:35 game here in Fort Wayne, and it's been selected as the featured free game of the day in minor league baseball. So there's a variety of ways you can catch the broadcast tomorrow night for free on MLB.com and MILB.com, Cubs.com. And for the Tin Caps, they'll have not only Salas behind the plate, but right-hander Dylan Lesko on the mound. He's a 20-year-old, the top righty pitching prospect for the Padres. So, in addition to the fact that the Golden Bachelor is going to be at the game here tonight for that audience, fun promotions. There's these top prospects too.
I hear he's looking for a date again.
Yes, I know. It's funny when this was arranged in the off season, he was happily just married, and we are going to have like a side promotion here tonight where there's like some degree speed dating type of thing going on. And I'm just kind of quipping to myself, oh, is Gary going to join in? He's back on the market. We'll see.
Oh boy. Oh, love is hard to find. I can hear Harry Carey now. John, great to catch up with you. And for people that want to check out that game tomorrow, you will hear John on the call. I know on MLB TV, which I get, they put those games on as well. So if you have that service, you'll be able to catch South Bend and Fort Wayne with John on the call. And always great to hear from you. Always appreciate you're the one that kind of welcomed me to the Midwest League. Gosh, it's been 9 years ago now. So I remember that phone call. It was supposed to be 10 minutes. It lasted 2 hours. So I've always appreciated that and your friendship and coming on the program.
Yeah, you're the best, man. It's been great to be friends here. And, hey, best of luck to you tonight here. And I know your son Cooper is going to be getting the chance to play with the Cavemen of Mishawaka over there at Four Winds Field. So that should be a pretty awesome senior night experience.
You bet. John, be well. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks, Darren. See ya.
That's John Nolan, the voice of the Tin Caps. And Sports Beat continues next on WSBT. We're back on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on your home of the Fighting Irish, Sports Radio 960, WSBT. My name is Darren Pritchett. It's time for our Notre Dame Football Week in Review. This particular update will center around Notre Dame football recruiting. Mike Singer is the Notre Dame Football Recruiting Insider at Blue and Gold Illustrated, blueandgold.com. And I asked him about a couple of recruits who either coming to visit Notre Dame or have set their commitment date. And Mike, let's start things off by talking about a player that you've informed us about, it seems like, for a long time now, but Mark Zachary has now set a commitment date. What does it mean?
Yeah, Mark Zachary is definitely someone we've been talking about for a long time. One of the top two players from the state of Indiana for the 2025 cycle, Zachary and Damian Shanklin, both guys from Indianapolis. And Zachary, a top 100 overall player, a four-star cornerback, from Ben Davis, terrific football and basketball player. So he's got a Final Four schools list, again, this elite cornerback recruit, of Notre Dame, Cincinnati, Florida, and Michigan. His commitment date, Darren, is set for May 25th. So your boy will be working on a Saturday, it appears, as we're looking to see what Zachary ends up doing. It's interesting, Darren. I logged a prediction for Zachary to end up at Notre Dame last August. Okay, I logged 8 predictions for Notre Dame in the month of August. 7 of the 8 have hit. If Zachary picks Notre Dame, I'll be 8 for 8 in the month of August. It'll be something that I will, I'll have a bruise on my back from patting it so hard. It'll be something that I talk about for a long time, because that's kind of something that's unheard of. And they were not like, oh, he's committing in 2 days, so I'll log the prediction out. No, it was none of that. They were all like 2 months out, or, potentially in Zachary's case, would that be like 8, 9 months out? So, So that's kind of a side note, Darren. But in terms of Zachary, I do like the prediction. Cincinnati's actually probably the school that is finishing. If he does pick Notre Dame, I think Cincinnati will be the school that finishes number 2. He's got a really good connection with that staff. I believe he has some kind of personal or family ties to the Bearcats as well. So, again, we'll see what happens next Saturday. Florida was actually the dream school for him growing up. I'm not 100% sure about the Michigan connection and what interests him in that program. But, again, Wolverines are really just coming off of a national championship. So we'll see where Zachary ends up picking. But it's pretty well known at this point that Notre Dame is the team to beat. If he has any last-second thoughts, we will see. But you've got to feel pretty confident, if you're a Notre Dame fan or a Notre Dame coach, that, he'll be picking up your hat next Saturday.
And that would pretty much put a capper on a pretty doggone good cornerback group.
I mean, an outstanding cornerback group. If you're able to get Mark Zachary and pair him with Dallas Golden from Tampa Berkeley Prep, who the Irish landed a commitment from a couple weeks ago, also have, Cree Thomas. From Phoenix Brophy Prep, the same school that Notre Dame landed Ben Morrison from. You're looking at a damn good cornerback class. And the safety group is outstanding as well, with Ivan Taylor and Ethan Long. And they're still working on, guys like Jadon Blair and Jameer Joseph, who are some elite talents. So, yeah, it's looking like one of the best defensive back classes Notre Dame signed in a really long time. Probably the best or potentially the best if they get Zachary and get, someone like Blair, potentially the best in the internet recruiting era.
Yeah, I was going to say it'll be the best since the Holtz era at the very least. Let's keep the conversation going about commitment dates. Up next, James Simon.
Yeah, so this is a four-star running back from Shreveport, Louisiana, Calvary Baptist Academy, four-star prospect, 5'11", 190 pounds. Now, Simon, everyone thought for the longest time was an LSU lean, and that Brian Kelly would be able to keep him close to home. But I'm actually hearing that Notre Dame is above LSU in his pecking order. And Steve Wildfrong from On3, former Notre Dame beat reporter and now a high up and a national reporter at On3, he said the same thing. So Texas is the team to beat. He's going to be announcing his commitment May 29th. It's actually going to be at the On3 Elite Series, a big kind of conference that's going to be in Nashville at On3's headquarters later this month. I'll actually be there. I'm looking forward to it. It's the second annual event. I was not at the first one. Really looking forward to seeing what it's about here in a couple weeks. So Simon, again, looks like Texas, Notre Dame, LSU in that order. I think it's the Longhorns. We'll see. He did have a really good visit to Notre Dame in April and was also at the October Notre Dame-USC game in 2023. So Notre Dame's got 2 running back commits already. It's always been really interesting for me that the Irish are still looking at someone like James Simon. And my understanding is that Dale McCullough, the Irish's running backs coach, has gone out and scouted other 2025 running back prospects. So what that all means, I don't know. To be completely honest, it's been a really interesting thing. But Simon does appear to be trending towards Texas. But we'll see if he, you know, has any changes of thought in the next couple weeks.
Our Notre Dame football conversation is with Mike Singer, the Notre Dame football recruiting insider. Blue and Gold Illustrated. Read his work at blueandgold.com. I'm WSBT Radio's Darren Pritchett. Madden Faremo has set a Notre Dame official visit date.
Yeah, this is a big target for the Fighting Irish, Darren. Number 73 overall player, number 7 linebacker in the country, according to the On3 industry ranking. Notre Dame landed a heck of a linebacker from Southern California in the last cycle. Kingston Villanueva, well, they're looking to make it back-to-back years here with J. Sarah Catholic's Madden Faremo, 6'3", 225-pounder. Could play inside linebacker, could play really anywhere in the front seven except for, like, you know, an interior defensive lineman. He can get after the passer, you know, with his hand in the dirt. And I think he can play an inside backer spot as well. So he is someone who does not really talk much in media. I had heard weeks ago that he was going to be visiting Notre Dame for the weekend of June 7th. But some of these times, like, I don't want to disrupt what is going on with one of these kids, if that makes sense, Darren. Like, if he doesn't really want it out there, then I don't want to put it out there. But it can be kind of a tricky thing. But with Faremo, I knew, like, all right, if we're going to report his official visit date, we're going to talk to him. So On3's Chad Simmons has done a really good job with communicating with Faremo, and we're finally able to confirm that. So Faremo told On3 he's visiting Washington May 31st, that, you know, that first weekend of June for an official. Then he goes to Notre Dame the 7th, Ohio State June 14th, and Texas June 21st. So USC, I don't know if he's taking an official there, but it's the local school he's been to a few times. So it's those schools he's taken his official visits to, and USC, that look to be the teams to beat. So Notre Dame, Ohio State, USC have been on top for a while. Then Washington and Texas have emerged here in the past few weeks. Personally, I think it's Notre Dame that he's going to end up picking. I think Notre Dame's got the lead going into his official visits. Irish sources were actually hoping that they would be able to land him, you know, before the month of June and make a push. So I don't know if that's going to happen, but his last visit to Notre Dame was April 13th, and that was a tremendous trip, and his first time back in June of 2023. So been to campus a couple times. Both trips went really well. I don't think at this point they're going to be able to get it done before official visits, but he did tell On3 that he is eyeing a commitment before his senior season. So down to 5 schools. I think Notre Dame's on top right now, but this one does appear like it will come down to the official visits and which school he likes the most at that point, Darren. So Madden Faremo, for several months now, Darren, you know, you talk to Notre Dame sources and say, hey, who are some of the top of the board targets? Faremo is someone who would come up for.
You can get more Notre Dame football recruiting information from Mike Singer at Blue and Gold Illustrated, blueandgold.com.
Show me the money.
We go with Sizzler. We go with Sizzler.
It's time for our sports wagering segment. We go into Sizzler. It's been a cold week. Went 0-4 the last time I was on the show on Wednesday. So we have fallen to 17-18 for the month of May and down $10.46.
I want winners.
Here are my 4 picks for tonight. The first 2 are from Major League Baseball. We're going with the Detroit Tigers on the road on the money line at Arizona at minus 150. You bet 10, you can win $16.66. From Busch Stadium in St. Louis, the Boston Red Sox, their starting pitching has been phenomenal. The Cardinals' offense has been a long way from phenomenal. Red Sox on the money line at St. Louis at minus 118.
we can win $18.47 on a $10 bet. I'm going to go with the Knicks on the road at Indiana. We'll take the 5.5 points in New York at -110. You bet 10, you could win $19.09. Stanley Cup playoffs, this is from the heart. I'm struggling right now, so why not go and hope my team pulls one off? We'll go Game 6, Eastern Semifinals, Stanley Cup playoffs. Bruins at home to force a Game 7. We'll take the Bees on the money line against Florida at +124. We bet 10, we could win $22.40. Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser and Ghost Energy. It's the feel-good energy drink we've all been waiting for, featuring Sour Patch Kids-inspired flavors. Barnaby's of Mishawaka and Granger, now with 3 locations, serving Michiana's most favorite pizza since 1978. Bethel University Athletics, sign-ups for youth summer sports camps are underway. Visit bupilots.com for details. And First Aid Bank, lends strength to our communities by devoting ourselves to helping local businesses grow and prosper. South Bend Cubs baseball is next on WSBT South Bend. Have a great weekend.
Hey everyone, Saltgrass Steakhouse is now open in Mishawaka. Wrangle up the crew and head down to Saltgrass Mishawaka for an unforgettable experience. Sink your teeth into mouth-watering, char-grilled, certified Angus beef steaks. Sip on ice-cold craft cocktails. And don't forget to try the famous Spicy Range Rattlers, all made daily in the Scratch Kitchen. Start making delicious memories at Saltgrass Mishawaka, 5126 North Main Street, across from Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries. Dine with us today.